This Augusta Golf Show podcast is brought to you by Gerald Jones Audi. Inspire design, where emotion takes shape. 4022 Washington Road in Martinez.
At some point in our lives, we've all done things to fit in. But then we realize the importance of being ourselves. Introducing the distinct Audi Q5, an SUV all its own. Its LED DRLs stand out wherever they shine. And with Audi Quattro all-wheel drive and available Audi Drive Select, it delivers performance that no one can imitate. So be yourself. Visit your Audi dealer to test drive the distinct Audi Q5.
I'm David Jones. Come see the largest selection ever of Audi A3s, Q5s, and Q7s. Audi exceptional luxury performance at Gerald Jones Audi, 4022 Washington Road in Martinez, or visit us on the web at GeraldJonesAudi.com.
Well, John Feinstein is a columnist for the Washington Post, Golf Channel contributor, and award-winning author. His latest book, The Legends Club, is available wherever you get your books. It is a pleasure to welcome John Feinstein back to the Augusta Golf Show. Hi, John.
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm good. I guess we start with the controversy. Although I'll say this,
shame.
I know. But I'll say this, as I was watching the telecast on Sunday, it couldn't have happened to a better person from this perspective. Nothing bothers him. Nothing phases Dustin. It kind of rolls off his back. And I thought, boy, had this been Jordan Spieth or maybe anybody else, this would be different. But I thought, you know, Dustin, this won't bother him.
No, you're absolutely right, and I thought that at the time. And it's funny because on Saturday morning, when we were kind of setting up the end of the second round and the beginning of the third round on Golf Channel, Aaron Oberholzer made the point that when you're in a situation like this with stops and starts and having to play 36 holes a day and having to come out early in the morning to finish rounds, you really need to just take the approach, whatever, man. And I said in response to that, well, there's nobody on the tour who is more of a whatever man, or in his case, whatever dude guy, than Dustin Johnson. And you're right. I think when Jeff Hall and Thomas Pagel came out and said to him, you may be penalized a shot, he was like kind of like, okay, whatever, dude, and just kept playing.
It's funny because those were the qualities through the years that we thought would keep him from so many things. Mm-hmm. And in the end, you know, 2010 at Whistling Straits. I mean, right. It has seemed to serve him well at times.
I think it could go both ways. We all say that there are some athletes who are too smart for their own good. They think too much. They're too detail-oriented. Well, that's never been Dustin Johnson's problem. There have been. Now, Whistling Straits, he screwed up because he didn't remember the rule. Now, I've always maintained that he should have been rescued by David Price, because good officiating in that circumstance, when a guy is, you know, in the crucible of trying to win a major championship, and he's in this extraordinary circumstance where this what looks like part of a garbage dump is deemed to be a bunker, even if it was all over the locker room doors, even if Dustin Johnson should have known it, all he had to do was, when he walked over and said to Dustin, "What do you need me to do?" and Dustin said, "Can you clear the crowds?" all he had to do was said, "You got it, and of course you know you're in a bunker." That's all he had to do. It's preventative officiating. It was the right thing to do, and he didn't do it. So Dustin's at fault first, his caddy second, David Price third in that circumstance. But in this circumstance, I think it did serve him well. I also think that, you know, and I'm not a big believer in these myths put out by agents and TV people that athletes transform when they become parents. But I do think that he has matured. I actually spent some time with him. I had lunch with him 2 weeks ago at the Memorial because of this Ryder Cup book I'm working on. And I do think he is more comfortable with himself now. He went through, you know, that period where he left the tour and tried to get his life straightened out, tried to stop drinking, knew he was becoming a dad at that point. And I do think he's a more resolute person now than he once was, and I think that helped him.
You know, you mentioned that incident in 2010 with the official. That brings me to this point. Here's one of the things I was trying to understand on Sunday. If you have walking officials with a group, mm-hmm. and they make a ruling, why are you not backing up that walking official? Why have them if their ruling doesn't matter?
Well, I think what the USGA would tell you is that that as in other sports, their video review can overturn a call, which is now part of sports, isn't it? Football, basketball, baseball.
But it's immediate.
Exactly. That's the big difference. But it's harder to be immediate in golf because you're spread out over, in this case, 191 acres, as opposed to the game being right there directly in front of you. And also the difference is when the call goes in the player's favor, there's nobody. Lee Westwood, who was his fellow competitor, didn't dispute it. Lee Westwood agreed with it. So you don't have a coach or a manager, you know, throwing out a red flag and saying, stop the game, let's review it. It's the fans who do it, which I think is unfortunate. But I agree with you that the only time I think you should overrule, and again, let's go back to the other sports, what do the rules say? If there's a clear mistake, you change the call. Yeah. If it's close, you leave the call in place that was initially made. Best case scenario for the USGA, this was a very close call because there was no precedent. There was nothing they could say, well, this happened in 2002 and so-and-so was penalized when he had not addressed the ball. There's no precedent. And the other thing that bothers me, and I should say as a disclaimer, John, you know I did the book Open back in 2002 and worked with very closely with the USGA mm-hmm. on that book. And one of the guys who was extremely helpful to me and who I consider a friend was Jeff Hall. But having said that, the rules also say that the player should be given the benefit of the doubt if there's doubt. And clearly there was doubt here. And if it's clear-cut, like somebody will say, well, what about when Slugger White penalized Tiger Woods 3 years ago in Chicago when Tiger did not believe the ball had moved? Everybody else who looked at that video believed the ball had moved. The only person who didn't believe the ball hadn't moved, and I'm not sure he even believed it, but who said he didn't believe the ball had moved, was Tiger Woods. So that was not a benefit of the doubt circumstance because there was no doubt. This was very much a benefit of the doubt circumstance, and I think the USGA, in a long-winded way, I'm agreeing with what you just said, should have left the initial call in place because there was clearly doubt.
We're talking with John Feinstein. His latest book is The Legends Club. You mentioned Lee Westwood, another competitor. Boy, they chimed in on Twitter on Sunday.
Yes,
is that a good thing that we're seeing these days?
You know, it doesn't matter whether it's a good thing. It just is.
Yeah.
You know, it's the way. There are a lot of things that are part of our lives now that are good and that are bad. You know, dealing with airports is bad. the internet when it works is good, at least for me. But it is what it is, and players are going to chime in on Twitter. Some of them, in a different circumstance, if there was a clear violation of the rules and it wasn't called, I'm sure guys would have chimed in and said, wait a minute, how can you not call that? But of course, they're going to side with their fellow player more often than not, especially in this circumstance where there was so clearly, as I said, at the very least, doubt about whether he should have been penalized. And again, I think a lot of it gets back to the USGA does run a golf tournament different than the PGA Tour. And the best example of that is Live Clean and Place. They never play Live Clean in Place. They will not play Live Clean in Place. They never have. They never will. You know, a lot of guys call Live Clean in Place Live Clean and Cheat. But mm-hmm. as you know, if there's 8 drops of rain on the ground at a PGA Tour event, they play Live Clean in Place, because the players prefer it that way and because they're not protecting par the way the USGA is. So they run a golf tournament differently. There is no doubt in my mind that if the PGA Tour had been in charge of this event, Dustin Johnson would not have been penalized.
Before I let you go, you had mentioned having lunch with Dustin.
Mm-hmm.
So many of the guys who win majors for the first time get really psyched up about winning majors. They like that feeling.
Right.
Do you think Dustin, is this the start of Dustin winning some major championships?
I think we all tend to say when a clearly talented player breaks through and wins his first major, first of many. I remember when David Duval finally won the British Open and had been so close, and specifically at the Masters a couple times, but had been close to winning other majors. Oh, first of many. He never won another golf tournament. And David's a different sort of guy, and in fact, he's sort of the anti-Dustin Johnson, and he is a deep thinker and is a reader, and took a very existential approach to winning a major championship. I don't think Dustin will take an existential approach. But I always hesitate to say, oh, yeah, he's going to win. Because remember, there are a lot of other good players out there trying to win majors.
Yep.
It's not as easy as we all sit back and we say, well, he should win more. How many is Jason Day going to win? How many is McIlroy going to win? How many is Spieth going to win? Fowler still hasn't won one. So there's a lot of guys out there trying to win majors. Do I think he'll win another at least? Yes, I do. I don't think he's about to turn 32, still a relatively young player. As I said, I think he's in a better place. One of the things I admired was, you know how when guys finally break through, it doesn't matter what sport, and somebody says, oh, do you feel like the monkey's off your back? I didn't have a monkey on my back. He said, you're darn right I do. I feel like the monkey's off my back. I feel lighter. He was very honest about that. I think that will help him going forward, that monkey's not there and those ghosts aren't there anymore.
He is John Feinstein. Again, his latest book is The Legends Club. I always appreciate the time. Thank you, John.
My pleasure as always, John. Talk to you soon.